Imported chocolates, cookies, cheeses, and gift baskets for the holidays. Party catering is also available. World Harvest Foods, located at the intersection of 6th and University in Champaign.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. Sometimes I say welcome back because this is indeed the second hour of the program. We're glad to have you listening this morning. My name's David Inge. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and Henry Frain is at the controls this morning. We have a health topic for you in this part of the show, something we do at least once a year, and we thought that certainly it was something that we could do more than once, and we're going to be talking about the back and care of the back. And it's probably a good time to do it because I expect that we're going to have some back strain out there over the next few days as people are dealing with the snow that we have had. And of course, any time of the year, people can have problems with their back. And probably if you live long enough at some time in your life, you're going to have some back pain. Well, we have as our guest this morning a guy who can help you out or at least offer some advice on how you can keep your back healthy. And he is James Harms. He's an orthopedic surgeon at Carl Clinic's Spine Institute. And has been here on the program with us before to talk about the back. And as we always say, what I always try to say when we have doctors on the program, we hope that people will keep in mind that we cannot do diagnosis over the telephone. There are some limits as to what the doctor can do because he can't see you. But we do programs like this because we think that it adds to your knowledge about health. And if you have some basic questions, well, this is a place that you can start and you can talk with the doctor. And then you might want to go on and pursue it with someone who actually can see you. But I don't want to discourage anybody here from calling. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's for local folks. We do also have the toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call for you, you can use that, and we'll pay for the call. That is 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here, as always.
We've been doing this probably for a while. I don't know how long. Do you remember how long?
You know, I just made a note to look that up. I'll bet it was 1985 would be my guess.
It's been a few years.
You've been here that long, right?
At least, I've been here at least that long. Mm-hmm. I've been here almost 30 years. Sad lack of ambition, but that's another story. So we've been doing this for a while, and you have been in this area of practice for a while, and I thought it would be interesting to ask you at the beginning just to talk a little bit about, over the time that you have been dealing in this area, what are some of the most significant changes or perhaps developments, you know, things, tools that you have now, techniques that you have now that you did not have when you started?
Oh, an awful lot of things have changed. One of the most dramatic, of course, is the scans. When I was in training, we had myelograms to diagnose people. And now, of course, we have CAT scans, CAT scan myelograms, and particularly MRIs that are particularly helpful. So instead of injecting contrast material into the spinal canal, tilting the patient on their head and on their feet and taking x-rays, we now put the patient in the middle of a tube that makes a lot of noise and it prints us out some pretty pictures and we can see their insides so much better than we could before. There are certainly instruments that are very, very helpful. In the spine, for example, there are plates, screws, rods that we can use to help put people back together, to help with their degenerative conditions. And just last year, the FDA approved a total disc replacement. So that has just been a tremendous boon to patient care and what we can now offer people. There are lots of non-technical things that have also changed. For example, in the old days, we used to keep people at bed rest when they had a problem with their back. Now we know that a day or two of bed rest can be good, but after that, it is harmful to people. So we preach activity for people with back problems. The whole philosophy of back care has changed. There have been an awful lot of scientific studies that now show us what best practices are. When I started out, a lot of what we did was because it's always been done that way. And now the literature just abounds with information, hard to keep up with, I admit, that tells us what works best under a given situation. There have been big changes in the therapies available because biologics are now becoming available. Scientists have been able to train bacteria and yeast to make certain products such as bone hormones that can now be put in spines to get a fusion to take place under the most difficult of circumstances. Of course, insulin is made that way. There are a number of other things in medicine that are done in a similar fashion, but that's just helped us tremendously. Also, the patient population is changing. We're seeing older patients, we're seeing heavier patients, and in fact, there are some diseases that seem to have changed. I notice that there's now narrowing of the spinal canal or spinal stenosis in patients that are much, much younger than I saw 20, 25 years ago. I see a thing called facet joint cyst. You know what a ganglion on the wrist is. Mm-hmm. It's an outpocketing of fluid with a covering on it from a joint. Well, the same thing can happen in the spine. And I didn't see or at least recognize those things 25 years ago. And now I see a couple a month. So it's just been a wonderful ride in medicine with what has changed and the techniques that are available for us today.
Well, we have a couple of people here to talk with, and maybe we can get back to some of these things, particularly at some point we might want to talk a little bit about total disc replacement. But why don't we go to the phones and find out what's on the minds here of people who are listening, starting with someone in Indiana, line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Hello. Approximately 6 months ago, I had some concurrent problems, and one of them was something happened to a major nerve in the back, my lower back, and I went to neurologists and other things and had a number. I've been MRI'd out, but it's a wonderful machine because it certainly gives you the visual presentation you need. And the doctor's comment was, it's a mess down there. You have a lot of disc protrusions, and this episode you've been going through is going to happen again, and suggest an evaluation by a neural surgeon in a larger city. And during the time that I was recovering and taking my physical therapy, and I'm now still exercising with 2.5-pound weights on my legs and doing the necessary things, hope to continue that forever, I find myself trying to decide which movements, you know, hinder me, help me, don't do a damn thing, or whatever. And I went quickly on the web to find out if there's any kind of information about if you find a pain here, you better stop doing these kinds of movements and angles and stuff. And then I thought, I don't know if any of this is true or not. So then you all of a sudden you showed up today on David's program, so I thought I'd put that question to you. Is the, I'd say, the presence of paying extreme attention to your movements and what happens after you do each and every kind of thing an appropriate way to look at yourself and try to help the presentation of improvement?
Absolutely.
Okay.
What you're describing is a back that's aging prematurely. My theory is you ought to have perfect health until you're 100 and then fall into a pile of dust.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it doesn't always work that way. It sounds like you've got some degenerative disc disease or some of your discs aging before their time, and that certainly can give you backache and some leg symptoms. It sounds like you've probably got some arthritis as well, which classically gives soreness and stiffness when in one position for a long time. If you've got enough disc bulging into a nerve, not just disc bulging itself, but actually displacing a nerve, or if you've got spur from the arthritis, that can cause leg pain with activity. Certainly, seeing a neurosurgeon is appropriate. On the other hand, most patients would prefer to do non-operative things first.
That's it. I'm hoping, you know.
I think that the fact that you're on a regular exercise program is wonderful because that's the single most important thing you can do to minimize the chance of future back problems. In terms of your specific question about motion and what to do and what not to do, there is a whole physical therapy school based on this, and it's called McKinsey Exercises. And in fact, the physical therapist examines you in some detail and finds out what makes your pain better, what makes your pain worse, and then prescribes an exercise program based on that. So I would suggest that you talk to your medical doctor or your neurosurgeon and find a physical therapist who specializes in McKinsey-based exercises, and I think that'll get you to the next step you'd like to achieve.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next caller is in Fithian, line 1. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard from a couple of sources lately that your hamstrings affect your back health and stretching them out with things like the yoga stretches have, greatly. I was just wondering if there was like a study done to determine if yoga helps reduce back pain, and I was going to ask you to define what exactly your hamstrings are, how they're attached, and if they tilt your pelvis or any of that.
Good question. Yes, indeed. The hamstrings muscle are a group of muscles that go from the pelvis down to the knee area. They are responsible for extending your hip, meaning take it backwards, and they're responsible for bending your knee. On the other side of the coin, if your leg is in a certain position, it would tend to backward bend the pelvis. So the hamstrings can affect the back and vice versa. So if you have tight hamstrings, it puts your back at a mechanical disadvantage and more of the force is transmitted up to the lumbar spine. On the other hand, if you've got a back problem, the nerves that go to the hamstrings can be irritated and cause the muscles to tighten. So it's sometimes hard to tell which comes first. I generally recommend that a person with a back problem do three forms of exercise: cardiovascular fitness, something to keep the abdominal and back muscles in good shape, and something for flexibility. The flexibility exercises include the hamstring stretching. So if you're prone to tight hamstrings, stretches can be helpful. Also, if you have back problems, stretches of the hamstrings can be helpful. However, if there is pressure on a nerve from a herniated disc or a spur poking on a nerve, spinal stenosis, you can work as much as you want on your hamstrings and you won't succeed because the problem is with the nerves that supply those muscles. Does that give you a little background?
Yes. I was wondering if about the yoga, if because it seems like, you know, it's been around forever, and if it helped backs, it would be pushed.
Yes. I generally recommend exercise to every individual with a back problem, unless it's a fracture, and then just simple walking. But yoga has been found to be tolerated by almost all patients with back problems, and that's why it's a good system of exercises. Gentle, non-power stretching and strengthening work is ideal for a bad back. It can also help for a person who tends to have tight muscles or stiff joints at other locations besides the back. In fact, I keep the name of a couple of yoga practitioners in my office in case people ask, and the phone book usually has some people in it also. That'd be a good choice, I believe.
Thank you very much.
All right,
you're welcome.
Thank you. Let's go to Urbana. The next caller here is on our line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 7 months pregnant and also have a 2.5-year-old who I do need to lift a few times a day, and I've found it increasingly difficult to lift him the right way by using my legs rather than my back without falling forward. I was wondering, am I doing severe damage to my back by lifting him any way I can? Do you have any recommendations for how I can avoid problems?
Yes, indeed. As a way of background, most females who are pregnant have a little bit of backache here and there, but nothing incapacitating. For females who have chronic back problems, who get pregnant, about one-third actually feel better, about one-third are about the same, and about one-third are worse. Females who have problems before their pregnancy should be involved in an exercise program to keep their abdominal and back muscles strong during the time that those muscles are stretched and stressed with the pregnancy. In a person who has not had back problems, do the best you can because many females over the years have been pregnant with 1, 2, or 3 kids at home and have survived quite nicely. A pregnancy corset can be beneficial. In general, a walking program, some straight leg raise exercises, those kind of things can help keep your muscles in as good a shape. And I'd say the odds are 90% that you'll get through it without any problems, doing the best you can lifting your 7-month-old. It's nice when they get a little older because then they can crawl into your lap.
Oh, no, he's 2.5, so he weighs
2.5.
Pounds.
You're 7 months pregnant. Oh, I missed that. 2.5 years old, yes. The trick there is to be sitting down and let him crawl into your lap and then stand up to pick him up.
Oh, okay.
That would be a good way of handling it so that you're not bending at the back to lift him.
Right. Okay. Great. Thanks a lot.
Right. You're welcome.
Our guest this morning, this part of Focus 580, is Dr. James Harms. He's a surgeon at Carl Clinic's Spine Institute and has been here before many times to talk about the back and care of the back. And if you have questions, call in and give us as much information as you can, and the doctor will try and help you out. 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. I was thinking about one of the things that you said right at the very, very beginning where I was asking about things that have changed over time. And the fact that there was a time when people had back injuries, the prescription was bed rest. We said, you know, stay off your feet. And that you're saying now one of the things that we have learned is that some exercise is actually important to getting better. So maybe at the very beginning, you might say, yes, rest for a day or two. But then slowly, with the right kind of exercise, it's important to be active for that healing to take place. What sort of things do you suggest to people to cope with sort of routine sore back? And maybe, as I said, the kind of thing that you get when you're out there and you've been shoveling snow or doing some kind of heavy work, and so you got back pain as a result.
Things have changed over the years, as we've been talking about. Bed rest was the initial treatment for herniated disc, for low back pain of non-specific cause. And our sports medicine colleagues have taught us that activity is life and inactivity is deconditioning. People who spend too much time down in bed get fat, flabby, depressed, start losing the calcium from their bones. So there's lots of negatives to bed rest. If you hurt like heck, a day or so in bed is not bad, but we like to help control the pain and get people up as soon as possible so that they're not debilitated. We know that in 6 weeks' time, you can lose all of your, or 80 to 90% of your muscle strength if you're in bed that long. So if a person has a problem with back pain, we like to get them on ice or heat. We like to get ibuprofen or Aleve inside of them if they don't have stomach problems, and start them on gentle activities such as just plain and simple walking. It's just a wonderful exercise for the back for most people. If a person cannot be kept active with those type of things, then a stronger pain medication can be helpful. If they have pressure on a nerve, an epidural steroid injection can be helpful. But in the long run, activity is what's good for the back.
And if you were selecting an over-the-counter pain medication, you would suggest one of those things that has anti-inflammatory properties rather than just the pain relief.
If you're taking a simple pain medication, such as acetaminophen or Tylenol, that helps a lot of people. But you get two things for your money with the Aleve or ibuprofen. You get both the pain relief of a Tylenol-like substance, and you get the anti-inflammatory, or cut down on the swelling and inflammation effect. So most people find, if they can tolerate one of those two, that either of those can be much more effective than a straight pain pill such as acetaminophen.
Okay. Charleston is the next caller here, line 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning. I have a question regarding a procedure I saw them talk about on the television here a week or so ago that was mainly for someone who had like a bulging disc or stenosis where they had some of the pain running down their leg. They showed where they put the person like in therapy on a flat surface, and they stayed there for about a half an hour, and it somehow worked on the muscles and nerves around the back and was able to relieve the symptom. Is that anything new, or you know what I'm talking about, or is it just another one of these things that they're promoting on TV from time to time?
I did not see the specific commercial that you mentioned, but there have been some things tried over the years.
Yeah, this was an MD promoting it, so it was just more than an infomercial type of thing, and it was actually done by a physical therapist.
Certainly, from the beginning of time, people have been stretched on a rack-like device to try to help with spinal problems, be it curvature or pain. is done today in physical therapy, traction. And in fact, there are computerized traction devices, one of which is called the VAX-D, that anecdotally helps patients. Unfortunately, there's no scientific evidence that these things help in the long run. They can make you feel better for a few minutes or a few hours, but don't do anything long term. If you want to try it, I would have no objection to it. I would merely caution you that if you do get temporary relief, you must get on an exercise program to keep those gains that you get with your traction. Now, they're also promoting massage beds, and I have heard commercials for those. And like any physical therapy modality, that can also make you feel better for a while. And if it's long enough lasting and you get your money's worth, wonderful. But you still have to change around your life as in a back booklet, get on a good exercise program, give up smoking if you're a cigarette smoker, get your weight within 20% of ideal if you want long-term success and relief.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right.
You're welcome.
Let's move on here. Urbana is the next, and this is line number one. Hello.
Hi. This is a perfect day to have this talk because I just came in from shoveling snow, and I just had a really sharp back pain all of a sudden, so I came in, and I'm laying on the couch right now. But this is the second time this has happened to me. About 3 months ago, the same thing happened to me when I was lifting weights. And I heard you say, you know, exercise program and everything. I lift weights pretty regularly, so I wouldn't expect that this would happen. I'm wondering if maybe I'm lifting too much weight. I don't know. I just wondered if you could give me some advice.
Yes, indeed. In all likelihood, you have a weak area in your lower back. It could be that there's a disc aging before its time. It could be there's a little arthritis in the back. Probably one of your discs is a little narrower than it should be. With your regular activities, you don't stress that area enough to cause you any symptoms. On the other hand, when you do vigorous activities, particularly suddenly increasing your activities, you are at risk of irritating that area. Inflammation then goes out into the nerves that go to the muscles, and you get a pain, often a sharp pain, sometimes an ache. As long as you're not having leg symptoms with it, I don't think there's anything terrible about to happen.
Oh, good.
Because most of us have these kind of things that tend to dissipate on their own.
Okay.
I don't have enough details, but there may be a begin quotes training error end quotes. People who suddenly increase their activities are at high risk for these things, these episodes to happen. People who gradually increase their activities are less likely to have this happen. So if you suddenly increase the amount of weights or the amount of repetition you're doing, you're at risk.
Okay.
If you're doing twisting activities that you've never done before while lifting weights, that's a risk factor. If you shoveled snow every day for 2 weeks and went out to shovel snow again today, you're unlikely to have a problem. But if you suddenly go shovel 4 inches of snow for 100 feet on your driveway, that's a big risk factor for anyone.
Okay.
If you can warm up, if you can stretch, if you can load up with ibuprofen ahead of time, if you can keep your activity level fairly high the rest of the year, then you're less likely to have these problems. But even if you live the life of a saint, you sometimes get caught.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks.
You're welcome.
It seems that that particular activity, shoveling snow, it's a combination of things, bending, lifting, twisting, that just seems like it's just almost guaranteed that it's going to cause a problem.
Pretty soon you're going to be able to do this program without me.
No.
Very insightful. The spine is very good at accepting loads. The spine is very good with bending. The spine's not too bad with twisting. But all three of those in combination is the hardest for the lower back to tolerate. And that's the activity, if you're going to get in trouble, that's most likely to give you trouble.
Yeah, and it's tough. Also, as you say, if it's tough, you have to ask somebody, when's the last time you did anything like that? Well, you know, it could be a long time. Even if you're fairly active, that combination of movements is generally probably not the kind of thing that you do.
Stretching ahead of time, using a smaller shovel, asking for a snowblower for Christmas, those kind of things. Oh, keeping warm. Keeping your muscles warm can, and your back warm can also be helpful. If I had a back problem and needed to go shovel snow, I would have a brace on as well, something to give me a little extra support and remind me to use good body mechanics. Even a wraparound belt that you could buy in a drugstore or medical supply place without a prescription could give you that little extra reminder.
Okay. The lines here are certainly free. We have a couple of people we'll get right to. We're a little bit past the midpoint. Our guest is Dr. James Harms. He is a surgeon at Carl Clinic's Spine Institute, and we're talking about the back, and questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We have some Urbana callers. The next is on line two, right here. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Well, you just answered part of my question. It's also a snow shoveling question. I also, of course, was shoveling snow this morning, and I'm standing here with a little bit of strain in my lower back. So my question really was you know, about if there is any, you know, if there are some advice about sort of a better way to do the snow shoveling, and you sort of gave some of that information, but one of the things you alluded to was sort of use proper body mechanics. I wonder if you could review sort of if there are ways to, you know, what motions to make that would be less strain on the back and less likely to cause problems.
Sure. The more that you bend, the heavier the load, and the more that you twist, the worse off your back's going to be, in the sense that there's a higher load, there's more force transmitted down to the discs that may not be as good as they were when you were 18. So by lowering the load, using a smaller shovel, by bending at the knees and not at the back as you pick up the snow, by turning your whole body as you move the snow from one location to another and not twisting your trunk, those are the type of things that will offer some protection. If you do stretching exercises for a few minutes before you go out, including some bending and twisting, if you wear an extra layer of clothes to keep your back warm, those things are the hints that I would offer at this point.
Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Right, thank you. And let's see. Next we'll go to another Urbana person, line one. Hello.
Hi. About a year ago, this time of year, there, with when the Vioxx thing became known and the questions about heart-related problems, there were also questions raised at that time about some of the other NSAIDs, the regular NSAIDs, like ibuprofen and naproxen, Aleve. And there hadn't been much study. Do you know if there's been more study, and what is the answer on questions relating those to possible heart problems?
Good question, and I do not have that in front of me right now, and I can't quote you the literature. I'm a spine surgeon, and I have to know a little bit about these things, but I'm not the kind of doctor that prescribes these medications day in and day out, such as a rheumatologist and arthritis doctor would. I'll give you some generalities, though. For the rest of the audience, an NSAID is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug or medication. It's thought to decrease redness and swelling and helps in many different problems. Originally developed for arthritis, it was found to help some people with degenerative disc disease, some people with muscle strains, etc. Vioxx, Celebrex, and one other medication were developed as a specialized anti-inflammatory because those drugs do not have as much gastric side effects. That is, there's less stomach irritation. All of those medications cause some stomach irritation, however. There are a goodly number of people that get gastrointestinal bleeds from the regular arthritis medications, anti-inflammatories such as ibuprofen, Aleve, and others. So these so-called COX-2, COX-2 drugs, such as Vioxx and Celebrex, are much safer from that point of view. However, any drug can have just about any side effect that you can imagine, and a few people had heart problems, heart attacks essentially, who were using Vioxx, and it was above the average rate in the population. I don't know of any specific studies that have looked at the ibuprofen and Aleve. I do know that they do thin the blood some, and in that sense might protect against heart attacks. That's why people take aspirin, for example. It's a good non-steroidal anti-inflammatory that can cut down the risk of heart attack or second heart attacks. So I believe that it has been studied, but I don't have those specific numbers in front of me. I believe an internet search would give you at least the abstract for such articles. Your primary care doctor could help with that, or if you have a rheumatologist who's a friend, I suspect the rheumatologist could just tell you off the top of his or her head.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Line 3 is the next caller. This is Urbana also. Hello.
Hi. I was wondering, you mentioned that you're seeing a lot of things now with bags that you hadn't before. Some would seem obvious to be related to increased weight gain and less physical activity, but this narrowing of the spinal canal, the spinal stenosis, isn't obvious to this layperson as to what might be causing it. Do you have any thoughts about that, or does anybody?
Yes, indeed. The books, when I was in school, the textbooks stated that people didn't get spinal stenosis unless they were over 65. And in fact, the youngest one that anybody could remember was age 55. I'm seeing it in patients in their 40s and 30s, and sometimes even younger. The current theory is that because the spine develops and has a critical time for determining the size of the lumbar spine at about 6 weeks of gestation, that is about 6 weeks after conception, that there could be a viral incident in mother that is transmitted to the fetus that could partially arrest the development or widening of the spinal canal. And the lumbar spine seems to be more sensitive to that than other areas of the spine. I read an article a couple months ago about the possibility of that. No experiments had been done to reproduce it, but it was just an article saying, given what we know, something must be happening at this time of life.
Really interesting. Thanks a bunch.
You're welcome. Right,
thank you. And again, we'll take another call here. This is someone listening in Salem on line 4. Hi.
Celeste Quinn earlier this week interviewed Dr. Andrew Weil, and he recommended an herbal mixture by a company called New Chapter. It's called Zyflamed, and it's a COX-2 inhibitor and anti-inflammatory, and he said he highly recommended that. I just thought maybe your listeners would enjoy that. Everyone I've known who's ever had back problems smokes cigarettes, and it's real sort of pathetic. But I just thought I'd pass that along.
Good. Okay. That brings up a couple of comments that might warrant some attention. First of all, the over-the-counter medications that are begin quotes herbal end quotes or begin quotes natural end quotes. You've got to be careful with them. Some of them have been adopted for use by physicians and some of them have been condemned. And when you're going to your physician, you need to let your doctor know that you take those. If there was a very much active COX-2 inhibitor in the natural product, I would be surprised. So it'd be interesting to compare, say, a Vioxx or Celebrex activity level to the activity level in the natural product. I would think it'd probably be low. On the other hand, if it helps you, I don't have a problem with it. The cigarette comment is also interesting. I would say that 2/3 of the people that I see with degenerative conditions of the back are either cigarette smokers, overweight, or both. We think that cigarette smoking causes the discs to age prematurely. So I give my patients the Harms cigarette lecture, and they kind of just shake their heads at me. But every once in a while, somebody quits smoking. Now, I still treat people who smoke cigarettes or who are overweight because I don't do everything my doctor tells me either. It's just human nature to be less than perfect.
Over time, and I know we've talked a lot about the fact that there can be, for a variety of reasons, some natural, some having to do with lifestyle, this deterioration of the disc, that is the cushiony material that's in between the vertebrae, and that depending on how bad it is. There are various kinds of things you can do about it, and it may indeed be that it's so bad that the only thing that you can do is actually do a fusion and fuse the two vertebrae together to deal with people's pain problems. And the only downside, I guess, or one of the downsides would be is perhaps slightly decreased mobility, because at that point the spinal cord doesn't want to bend anymore. So I would think that if you were imagining what you would really like to be able to do, you would say, well, heck, wouldn't it be nice if we could put in a new disc? We would have some kind of artificial material that would be like the natural material. We'd do some surgery. We put in the new disc, and the person is just going to be good as new. Now, one of the things you mentioned as a recent development is the fact that last year the FDA had indeed approved a total disc replacement. What exactly, how involved is that procedure? I would imagine that we are talking about major surgery.
Well, it's nice that we've gotten to a surgical topic. After all, I am a surgeon, and we've been doing all these medical things here. Yes, indeed, there are lots of options for people that we talked about, including lifestyle changes, exercises, temporary things such as visiting a physical therapist for modalities or a chiropractor. The current technology up until recently was those things or a spinal fusion. That is, put bone chips along the side of the spine to get the body to grow the abnormal area into one solid piece, stop the motion, stop the inflammation, and help the pain somewhat. Obviously, that's not an ideal treatment, because we would like to preserve motion whenever possible. It is now available to the public, since the FDA has approved it in the fall of last year, to do a total disc replacement. There are four or five under development in the United States. It's been used in Europe for about 20 years. But there is one called the Charité disc that can be put in patients now. Before everybody gets on the phone and starts making an appointment for their total disc replacement, I have to caution people that in our area, there are no insurance companies that currently cover this. Occasionally, a patient will be approved by pre-certification, denial, appeal, denial, and a second appeal. There are some patients who will be allowed to have it. If you've got the bucks in your pocket to do it yourself, that's fine. I have had a couple patients over the last couple of years that have traveled to get into studies where the company actually picks up the tab for their surgery. Going back to the main question, yes, a total disc replacement is available, and I've taken the course to do that, so I know what it's about. It's an incision in the front of the spine. Push the intestines out of the way, move the artery and vein away from the spine in the front, clean out the disc aggressively, and put in a metal piece on top, a metal piece on bottom, and then a polyethylene or plastic piece in the center. And that close it up afterwards. That allows motion. And patients, by and large, do very well with that type of operation. It is a big operation, and it's only available under very strict circumstances by the FDA. It can be used off-label, so to speak, but it is currently approved for use in people who are candidates for spinal fusion, meaning they have serious problems and they've exhausted non-operative therapies, which usually include 6 months of an exercise program. The person has to be between the ages of 18 and 65 and not have any osteoporosis or lack of calcium in the bone. The person should not have pressure on the nerves, such as a spinal stenosis, and a person must not have any structural abnormalities, such as a spondylolysis in the back. That's a crack in the back of the spine that would keep the spine from restricting the forward and backward slippage of the total disc. So that's an outline of what it is, and it's becoming more and more popular in the United States as an alternative to fusion, not for treatment of routine back pain, but as an alternative to a spinal fusion. Hmm. In the future, there are some other things that are even more exciting. This is a total disc replacement, And there's now a nucleus replacement that is undergoing trial. So it's a small incision in the back, such as you were having a herniated disc surgery. You clean out the disc and put in the new center disc material. It's a gel in a bag, and it imbibes or absorbs water and expands to give you a new center of the disc. There are experiments being done with injecting growth factors into discs to get the discs to regenerate. So others are taking cells out of an animal disc, putting them in culture, rejuvenating them, and injecting them back in to grow more disc material. So there are lots of exciting things, but only the total disc is currently available.
Yeah. And it sounds like as if what you would like is if you could see there would be some way to do it with the procedure being as the least invasive that you possibly could. And it sounds like that certainly with a total disc replacement, it's pretty invasive. It's quite involved. If you could do something where you would have to cut the person less, that no doubt would be better. It would be more desirable.
Currently, the placement of the total disc in the front of the spine is about the same as doing a fusion in the front of the spine. Mm-hmm. Sometimes fusions are done in the front, sometimes fusions are done in the back, sometimes fusions are done both. I don't want to paint a picture that this is a draconian operation. It's not, and patients can easily be out of the hospital within 2 or 3 days after the procedure.
So why, I don't know if this is how complicated to explain this would be, but as a layperson, one of my first questions would be, why can't you go in from the back? Why do you have to go in from, why do you have to go in from the, to the front of the body rather than, I would think it wouldn't it be easier if you go through the back? There, you wouldn't have as much other stuff to go through that you are not interested in.
All spine surgeons are comfortable going from the back of the spine, and not all spine surgeons are comfortable going from the front of the spine. So on the surface, yes, that's correct. Unfortunately, there's something in the way called the nerves. And those nerves, you can't get the implant around without stretching them too much, and so your legs wouldn't work afterwards.
That would be bad.
Your bowels and bladder probably wouldn't work afterwards
that
either.
That would be bad. All right. I see. I understand.
So the arteries and the veins you can push out of the way. The intestines you can push out of the way, and generally they don't mind as long as you're not too rough. But the nerves, you can only stretch a little bit. And if you stretch them too much, they just don't work anymore.
We have maybe about 5-6 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with our guest, orthopedic surgeon, Dr. James Harms. And we're talking about the back. And if you have questions, we would be happy to talk. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. We have a caller in Chicago, line 4. Hello.
Yeah, hi. In 2003, I had learned for the first time that I have scoliosis of the spine. And because I was having a problem with, I'm up in my years, and I'm 75 years old, and I start having problems with my joints. And the osteopathic physician I was going to, he sent me to the rehab institute, and they were giving me some table therapy and exercises, and I would do exercises at home, and the pain in the joints went away. However, after I finished a six-month program, I found that I can't bend on my right side. When I bend, I have a hard time straightening up, and the only way I'm able to describe it is, and this is to happen after the rehab program, I find that the only way I could describe it is that it's like the ligament gets caught in the joint in the lower right-hand side of the back. So my question is, you know, what do you think that could possibly be?
Oh, that's a tough one. So you're 75 years old, and
right.
When you're 100, I'll give you credit for old age. Until then, no sympathy, by the way. You have curvature of the spine or scoliosis, mm-hmm. And you've got some pain in a number of your joints.
Not anymore, not since I went through that exercise program.
And
I would like to continue with the exercises, however, because I'm not able to bend, you know, without that ligament getting caught in that joint, I find it impossible to exercise.
And it's when you bend over, it's difficult to come up, and that's when you feel
right.
This. There are three...
I'm able to get up, but it's painful. Like I said, it feels like the ligament gets caught in there.
There's three or four possibilities as to what could be going on. Certainly, some people who have arthritis in their back can get a catch in the back. Mm-hmm. It's similar to if you have arthritis on the back of your kneecap and you go to straighten your knee out, your knee can grind or make noise. Mm-hmm. That's a possibility because the joints in your back of the spine can get arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a disc aging before its time, and particularly if you're doing some twisting when you're bending, then... Okay,
but
in some people, that's a possibility.
Yeah.
Also, there is a muscle that goes along the lower back called the psoas muscle. That goes across the hip, through the pelvis, and down into the top of the thigh bone.
Sometimes I feel that.
That can
Not that often, but sometimes I feel that.
That can catch on a protuberance or a bony prominence in the pelvis and can get you stuck down.
Mm-hmm.
The Rehabilitation Institute of Chicago, RIC, is a wonderful place for people with musculoskeletal problems. And I think that if you'd give them a call, go back and see your therapist, actually go through the maneuver that reproduces your pain with the therapist having a hand on your lower back, the therapist can give you a better idea of what's going on and can make some suggestions on how to avoid it or at least minimize it.
Okay.
But I think you're going to have somebody actually have their hands on you and feel what's going on at the time that you have it to give you an exact diagnosis.
Very good. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
We'll get at least one more. The next person in line is in Urbana, line one.
Is it my turn?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just wondering if there's any progress being made in regenerating nerve tissue in the spine.
Yep. Yes, indeed. There are a number of drugs or chemicals that are being used in animals now and maybe in experimentally in people to get the nerves to regrow. The problem is that when there's an injury, there's swelling. And we know that if we cool down the spinal cord or the nerves right after the injury, within a few minutes, that it can minimize the damage. Once the damage is done, the nerves or spinal cord cells continue to secrete substances that kill the nearby cells. That process, if you want to look it up on the internet, is called apoptosis, A-P-O-P-T-O-S-I-S. There are drugs that have been found to interfere with this, and there are chemicals that are now being introduced at the time of experimental injury in animals that will stop or forestall this process. So, yes, there are some things being done, but they're not ready for use in humans yet.
So if the nerves are already damaged and it's 10 or 20 or 2 years later, or 10 or 20 days or, you know, a long time later, are there drugs that can regenerate the nerve spinal tissue at that point or not?
If you're talking about a nerve that is cut, the you can do a nerve graft, and the nerve can sometimes regrow.
Uh-huh.
If you're talking about the spinal cord, we've been taught in school that spinal cells do not regrow. In fact, we know now that with the right kind of stimulus, they can.
Oh, great.
So even down, now, don't go to the bank with this today.
Uh-huh.
But in 5, 10, 15, or 20 years, I think that there will be significant progress in humans, and I think it will be available medically for us to use.
Well, that sounds wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Maybe one more. We'll go to Hidalgo, line two. Hello.
Yeah, I had three vertebrae in my neck and five in my lower back fused about 4.5 years ago, and I've been taking Neurontin to help my nerve damage. And I've got numb hands and a numb leg. I was wondering if there's anything besides what I'm taking that would help that, or exercise, or help me might get over this numbness. Sometimes it's not too bad, and sometimes it's not too good.
Sounds like you had a severe neck and lower back problem that required perhaps some pressure to be taken off the nerves and spinal cord.
That's right.
And that would have left you unstable, so you and the surgeon decided that a spine fusion would be necessary at the same time. In general, in the lower back, if you have a problem with nerves, the nerves do get better after the surgery. Unfortunately, in the neck where there's spinal cord, if the spinal cord has had pressure on it, then you can arrest the progression of the problem, but you can't always reverse it. So we tell people, don't wait too long in the neck. Neurontin is one of the nerve medications that suppresses the funny signals coming out of the nerves. So that and its cousins are good choices, and a neurologist could help you choose. B6 and B12 vitamins are what the nerves need to grow and stay healthy. So if you're deficient in either of those, taking vitamins can help. I tell people eat 5 helpings of fruits and vegetables a day as a good source of the B6 vitamins. But if you've not already done so, I would visit with a neurologist to see if something more can be done.
We must stop. I've got to jump in here. My apologies to the caller. One other person we can't take. We've just used up the time. And we want to say thanks very much to our guest, Dr. Jim Harms from Carl Clinic. He is an orthopedic surgeon at Carl's Spine Institute. He's been here before and probably would again if we asked him.
Of course.
Thanks very much for being here.
It's a pleasure, and may Santa Claus find your house.
Thank you. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Owens Funeral Home at the corner of Elm and University in Champaign, locally owned and operated and serving families since 1925. Owens Funeral Home invites you to join them in supporting public radio. The broadcast is also made possible by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign, and the staff there at The Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting AM 580. That is about it for us here on Focus. We hope that you will stick around, though. Of course, there is much more in the way of news and sports and weather and other sorts of features coming up as part of the afternoon magazine and another interview in the 1 o'clock hour. Celeste Quinn is the host, and you'll be talking about art in the 20th century and what it means to America.
That's right. We're going to talk about American art in the 20th century with University of Illinois art professor Jonathan Feinberg, one of the creators of the documentary Imagining America, Icons of 20th Century American Art, that follows the 1 o'clock news this afternoon. Let's turn our attention now to commodity prices. Let's go first to Kansas City, where December wheat is trading at $3.52, that down 5.5. Chicago December wheat, $2.93¾, down 1¾. March, $3.08½, down 3¾. December corn, $1.88, that down 1/4. March, $2.02, up 1/4. May, $2.11, up 1/4. December corn, $2.39¾, up 3/4. January soybeans, $5.64, that down 2¾. March, $5.72½, down 3. May, $5.78, down 1¾.